Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Friday morning. You just made the list coming up at high noon. Who or what has made you mad? Looking forward to that. At noon, Daquan Jones from the Titans will join us at 12:30 to talk about his matchup and their matchup against the Vikings up in Minnesota. And we'll have Lee Sterling at 1 o'clock picking some games, and then we'll pick games with you, pick six, in the final hour. Longtime strength and conditioning coach for the Oilers and the Titans, Steve Watterson, is on the line with us. I'm pretty sure he trained Ken Stabler when he was the quarterback for the Oilers. Steve, how you doing?
Good morning, guys.
That's not true. That was not true what I said, is it? You did not train Ken Stabler.
He was one step before me.
Yeah, it's not that far of a gap. But
Warren Moon. Warren was the man. How about Oliver Luck?
Wow. Oh, there you go. Oliver Luck.
Yep.
What do you make of all the injuries we've seen through 2 weeks in the league?
Well, it's not something that we didn't think was going to happen, because the greatest way to take a look at it is take a look at what happened during, 10 years ago at the lockout. Athletes basically forced to train away from the training center. And the style of training was different. The level of training for each guy coming in was a little different. What they did in preparing for the season was different. And so then you had the compression of the preseason training, dumping all the athletes. And there was immediately, matter of fact, I can remember before the guys were even brought back in, Gatorade Sports Science Institute flew a dozen of us between athletic trainers and strength coaches out to California for kind of like a brain trust meeting. Just, come on, what's the predictors? What's going to go on? What's new in the science world? And I remember one of the sessions was actually predicting, coming up with a predictor of what we thought were going to be the greatest increase of injuries. And I specifically remember addressing the Achilles.
Which has been a problem in the first couple of weeks.
Again, there's a lot of rationale that can justify this. I wish it didn't, but the fact of the matter is when you have the athletes away, no matter how hard they train, when they're not training reactively, now, I'm not trying to get into the science of everything, into the neurology of how pathways work, but there is a difference, if you think about it, between cognitive training and reactive training. It actually works differently from your brain and all the way down into your spine and into the reaction of the muscles. So to give you an example, let's take a look at a basketball player. A basketball player can play out of their mind and they're just in a zone and everything is hitting and they're just, the range is right for them. Well, that didn't happen accidentally. It's because they had done things repetitively over and over and over, and everything neurologically was working for them to make those shots. Well, what happens in football is you can train cognitively. In other words, I put you through a set of drills, and you know where my foot is supposed to step each time. If I have you run 40 yards, you know you're going to run from 1 yard, from the goal line to the 40-yard line, and then you can deaccelerate. You cognitively know that. But when you're on the football field and you're reacting to somebody else's movement, and so you're really having to be both coordinated and agile, and what happens is you don't have that time to say, okay, I'm starting here, stopping there. It's reactive. And that actually neurologically is different than cognitive. And if it's not trained, you set yourself up for an injury. And I'm going to give you an example of what happened last year in the NBA Finals. Remember Durant?
Yeah.
Blew out the Achilles?
Yep.
No matter how hard they were able to let him rest and heal and try to get that tissue taken care of, he was definitely going to have to fall short in the reactive phase of hitting the athletes back. And so what happened was, sure enough, he got his foot in a bad position, tried to do an explosive move while the tendon was elongated, and pop. Mm. Muscle hadn't been trained to be in that range with an explosive force. That's really what we're seeing on the football field, is these athletes are coming back, and they might be in great shape. But now all of a sudden they're reacting at such a higher rate of speed than they were ever training at. They missed a lot of the adaptive training qualities that happen during that training camp and introduction and high volume, low volume. Every coach in the NFL knows third day of training camp, you really start decreasing in the amount of load. So no matter how much you try to apply that model to what happened this year, it was compressed. And so it's going to relate to greater soft tissue injuries, specifically those injuries that have connective tissue that get the demand on them for an explosive movement, explosive action, and that's why you'll probably also see an increase in non-contact ACLs.
Which we've also seen. Steve Watterson on the line with us. I'll be curious with your answer on this one, just because you went through decades in the NFL as the surfaces changed, the playing surface changed. So you had the 49ers who just were absolutely decimated with injuries last week in East Rutherford against the Jets. A bunch of their star players went down with injuries, a lot of ACL injuries. They complained that the surface was sticky. One, how much did that go on with over the decades of teams and players complaining about a playing surface, and how much did that factor through your experiences over decades into injuries that we see on the field?
Well, let's go back now. When I started my first year, I'll go back, was as an intern in 1978. And so then I was at the Philadelphia Eagles. That was the invincible year with Vince Papale. And so what field were we playing on at Veterans Stadium? With that whole baseball field. And they didn't change it to football and actually take out the infield till halfway through the season, just like at for the Raiders.
Yeah, Coliseum. Oakland, yeah.
So, well, that was brutal. So, yeah, surface definitely makes a difference. And when they say sticky, that doesn't, for the fans out there listening, that doesn't mean it's like sticky like gum. That means sometimes they feel like the shoe grabs. Now, let me give you an example of this. I used to work with our field guys at the Titans. And they're great, great guys. Henry and Porch, they're two great guys that were very easy to work with. But I would make a point that the grass was too short. Now, you can say, well, what do you mean too short, Coach? How would that affect a player? You think that would be a better running surface?
Yeah, we had the same reaction as they did. We just were sitting here going, what?
Okay. Where would you, if you were playing a football game and you were playing it on the fairway or on surfaces like the green, where would you have more injuries?
I would say probably the green.
Absolutely. The reason is, imagine you getting up there for a putt and they dig in their spikes and they get all that surface contact. Well, you're out on the fairway, pretty hard to dig in. You're on this undulation, and there's less total surface contact between the shoe and the ground. So you have more liberty, more movement, almost like the ability to rotate. But when you stick that tight and there is zero ability to move between the shoe bottom and the surface, and that much contact, with any rotational change of direction forces, they're all absorbed up the chain from the ankle, a lot to the knee, even to the hip and the back. So the smoother the surface, the more friction, the more contact. Even sometimes if it's the same density, the softness, obviously the greens are more packed, but it's not the compaction as much as it's how much friction is made between the ground surface and the shoe. And if there's too much, that's an awful lot of load on those very strong, very explosive athletes that all gets transferred back to the body. And that's where, when not trained, high level of training, that's where that reactive movement really translates energy and relates into more injuries.
We're talking a long-time strength and conditioning coach for the Titans, Steve Watterson. Steve, you worked with so many players over the course of the years with the franchise, and I can remember you saying so much that availability is such a strength for a player. Tell us a story about maybe a player that, when he came into the league, really didn't have the understanding of what it took to stay available, keep his body, understand, maybe educate himself about some of these things that you're talking about. But as you worked with him, he really got it, and it led to a good career.
Well, I can go back all the way. I can go to a wide receiver that you may all know. Remember Drew Hill?
Sure. he was on some of my fantasy teams, for sure.
Okay, well, Drew Hill, when he came, we got him at the end of his career, coming over from the Rams. I can remember him being resistant. He was an older player, and he was like, "Golly, coach, what the heck is this? I mean, this is an awful lot of workload, and do we really need to be doing this much?" I said, "Drew, take a look at the workload. You'll find out that it's kind of an undulating load and that it looks like a lot on paper. But I really do adapt it based on variables, based on your strength, your abilities, your liabilities as much as disabilities, your liabilities. That means what are you weakest at?" And at that point, he had really started to tighten down. He wasn't as flexible as he needed to be. And he definitely had some muscle imbalances. But to make a long story short, I can remember after his second year, he came up to me and he goes, "Coach, I just want to thank you." He goes, "I feel better now than I felt in the last 7 or 8 years of my career." And it was because we addressed his specific needs, based on what his weaknesses were. I've always had these philosophies as far as addressing an athlete training in the offseason. Number one, tissue quality. Is the tissue prepared to train? Do you have any old scar tissue? Do you have any weaknesses? Is there any imbalances or tightnesses? Then there's tissue positioning. And that means, can you functionally move and can you complete the demands of that position? Because every position has different demands. Can you get into that range of motion and can you functionally move, recruit in that phase? Then you worry about the actual training, the training mechanism, tissue movement. And Drew Hill would probably be one of the earliest guys that I had that it was like an epiphany to him that, wow, I've just been out here trying to stay in shape, jog a little, lift a little, you know, do a few machines. I think one of the things that really set back the whole profession was the whole machine, the Nautilus phase of training, where we had guys just sitting on a machine thinking that we were just going to lift a weight in a linear motion, maybe get bigger muscles, and think that was preparing us for the very dynamic, multi-directional activities required in most sports.
Steve, right now, a lot of people are watching Jadeveon Clowney, who came in very late, and he's trying to get up to speed. Floyd Reese shared with us a conversation you two had where you told him it's going to take 6 weeks before you really get into good football shape. So what are the important things for the strength coach? Or, you know, what would you do with a player who came in late for a holdout or whatever the reason was to try to get him up to speed as fast and as safe as possible?
Well, with every athlete we ever had come in, and believe me, I didn't invent this. Great strength coaches have been doing it before I started doing it. And believe me, the gentleman, Frank Perino, working with Todd Torricelli over there, I guarantee they're doing everything and probably more than I ever did in preparing the athletes and knowing what needs to be done for that availability. Now, the first thing you do with an athlete, especially someone like Giovanni Clowney, and I'm going to compare him to Arakpo. Arakpo, I think it was 3 years in a row, he had major injuries, might have been four, before coming to us. He had, in fact, he had a couple of pec tears. I think there were two or three injuries into his upper extremity that really restricted his ability to complete the season. That's where the availability comes in. So we always did an evaluation, took a look at what they had done in the past, took a look at their injury profile, took a look at their fitness components, evaluated them, tested them, and then checked the tissue quality, and then built a program specific to their physiological needs. Now, that's the program. Now, the workload is the secret. Now, obviously, you got a head coach that played in the league, fully understands that workload can either make it, and if done improperly, can break it. You can't think that you can compress that time and try to fit more work in, but instead try to get quality work and let the bodies adapt and get used to tolerate the load, each practice, the amount of rest, and how you address that tissue. Because if you don't do it and you think it's just about the playbook, I mean, I don't know how a guy like Al Saunders, his playbook, they said, was like a War and Peace. It was the thickest, biggest book in the history of the NFL for offensive plays. I don't know how you could implement that in a lockout season or a compressed season, because you have to have so many reps doing these things. You have to be able to narrow down the workload and allow the players to adapt. I do believe that at the end of this year, take a look at who's going to make it the furthest. It's going to be those that can manage the physiology, the body of the athletes, as much as it is the X's and O's.
We've talked to you about the science, the training, but part of your role for the Titans was that motivational part as well. Maybe the night before a game. We've seen you at various roasts. One of them was Floyd Reese that we got a good kick out of. But you would do this type of thing from time to time to get the players on the same page, get them a good laugh, get them in the right frame of mind the night before the game. How did you come up with your system of how to do that, to blend the right amount of comedy, the right amount of, psychological, just getting the emotions going? How did you learn that skill?
I don't know. Maybe it's a fraternity days. Maybe going through Hell Week. Maybe getting which you can't do anymore. I mean, there are some things that I did in the past. I will say, I spoke last year. I received an award at the NFL from my fellow strength coaches, which was just a beautiful honor. And one of the things I addressed to all the young players, young strength coaches, was be flexible and adapt to the times. You may have the greatest system in the world, but things come and go. Know what to throw out, what to add in. And if you're not malleable, if you're not making change with the time, you're going to have a tough time staying in. I think I always tried to stay current on what was best for the athletes. Now, with the sense of humor and stuff like that, it's a long year. I mean, you go through between off seasons, and then there's a little break, and then bring them back to camp. It is a long, intense time together. And I have to tell you, if you don't have a great locker room, a great relationships with the guys, then it really makes it much more difficult. The wins, the losses, it's a roller coaster. I mean, very few times do you win all 16 games, as we know it. It's only happened once. And so that is a very difficult thing to go through. So you have to be able to adjust and realize the relationship is as important as sometimes what's in the X's and O's and the workload and the amount of weight they're lifting in the weight room, the ability to build trust, friendship, and a sense of humor.
Do you remember the first time you did one of those film presentations to the group with everybody in the classroom and they say, Steve, come on up here. give us your little talk, you know, where you have the slide presentation stuff. When was the first time you ever did that?
Jeff had me do that because he wanted, you know, there were so many more things that had to be covered. Everything from behavior. And I remember one of the first things I did that, that year, I think it was 2002, because I always did it just off the cuff, going through the expectations, more about here's the workout, here's how we do it, here's what my expectations are. I remember ending my presentations with the word coyote, coyote, C-O-Y-O-T, that means crap on your own time. you know, I didn't want them coming into the weight room and then turning around and saying, I got to go to the bathroom. Yeah, do that on your own. Come in here ready to work. You know, have your shoes tied. Don't bring in food. When the clock, when that whistle blows, we're going to get to work. And but then it started getting, we had to cover more topics. And one of them was behavior. And one of the things Jeff was always great about is telling the guys, you don't want to be that guy. The first guy, because the first guy that something happens to in the NFL, or the first time that something happens with a player, domestic violence, alcohol issue, DWI, anything, you're going to be mentioned and it's going to be brought to light. And then the second guy happens and they're going to say, yeah, this happened to so-and-so, just like it happened to that guy. And then the third one, you're going to be mentioned every time. And so the message was always, don't be the first guy. And Jeff used to chuckle, say, if we could get that through, he wouldn't be a first guy, and he would never be a second or third. So there were always ways to get the message across, because if you just come like it's algebra class, it makes it a long day and messages get lost. So I always found sense of humor often added to the delivery.
We're talking to Steve Watterson, longtime strength and conditioning coach for the Tennessee Titans. And nowadays, Steve, you see in the off season that if guys go back home or somewhere else, they have, you know, a training facility they go to, or they have somebody they work with. What was the communication like between you and maybe that independent trainer, so the message stayed the same and you could keep these guys on the program that you wanted to have them on?
Yeah, I did do that. I used to have to call and check with them. You know, it was, you know, you go back into the mid-2000s. I mean, you're going back, say, 2005, 2006, where it became more prominent. And, you know, they had changed some of the off-season rules. It was difficult to let your players go. I mean, I loved training my guys. I mean, I got to go back to 1980s. Well, I'll say 1986 when I started with the Oilers. We had a 52-week training program. 2 weeks off when the season ended, let the guys, and we had active rest. I actually gave them things that I expected them to do, even on those 2 weeks. Then we brought them back, and then we went for approximately 24 weeks of training. And then they had a couple of weeks off before training camp. And then training camp came. So, I mean, they didn't have the money. They didn't have all the other distractions. So it was great to be together. It was like being punching a clock. It was like working at a factory, and you just knew that's where you guys were all going to hook up and be together. But that changed. The athletes changed. The demand on the athletes changed. Expectations changed. And so I know some of my peers that couldn't make that change, and that's why they ended up leaving the profession. So when they would go to other places, very early I realized, don't fight it. Coordinate with it. Often you'd find some of these professionals were great. Now, sometimes you found out, wow, you better get your athlete out of there, and you better find your athlete. If he doesn't want to come back home because he loves South Florida, you might want to try to find them a really reputable place that can have them prepared. Now, when athletes left, I always handed them sheets. They knew what the expectation level was, where their scores were in the past, what their scores should be this time, a minimum, and that we were going to hit it going, because I had to have a sense of expectation that they were doing something, an accountability. So they knew when they returned, that they were going to be tested and evaluated on where they were at. And I can remember, I came up with a 300-yard shuttle. This goes way back in the early 80s, and it's still a favorite test used by teams now. And I can remember having guys not be able to complete the first one. And I can remember doing 180s at the training facility over there on Athens. You'll see that it's about 180 yards across all three fields. And I used to have different times, different speeds, different rest intervals for each position. And I remember Albert coming back and telling me what great shape he was in, Albert Painsworth. But I, to be honest with you, I talked to his strength coach. Said he hadn't shown up that many times. So when he did it on his second sprint, he cramped up, his back locked up, and the trainers had to come out and get him. And I said, Albert, you know, we're going to have to work together away from other guys and build a program to get your conditioning up to the other guys, because you're not ready to step in and compete with everything else that we're going to be doing. And I think that's one of the things that we might have done different than other teams. We would separate guys that we knew were not prepared to handle the workload. But coordinating with the other places and training facilities, it took a lot of time, build trust and relationships with those guys so that you could communicate, and then you could send them some of the things that you wanted that athlete to be training. But the biggest one that was always missing, this goes back to your very first question in this interview, was getting the athletes to do their spatial awareness and reactive activities, getting them to go against another player, getting them to do something where they had to break on a reactive activity like catching a ball and then making a break and a cut. That was often the thing that was remiss or missing when the athletes trained away from the facility.
Steve, a lot of things you threw out in this interview are things we were very familiar with. We shake our heads because that's what we do away from this radio show. The training we put in away from the 4 hours we're on the air is a lot of what you described. So thank you for telling the audience what we do away from the mic. Hey, good to talk to you. Good to hear from you. Really appreciate this. And let's do it again soon. Thanks for doing this.
Great, guys. Have a great day.
All right, you too. That is Steve Watterson, a longtime strength and conditioning coach. He has story after story after story. The man could write a book easily, and it would be a book I would read, and we do appreciate him joining us. That will do it for our second hour here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. When we come back, we will start things off with You Just Made the List. Tell us who or what has made you mad, and then Daquan Jones will join us at the bottom of that hour at 12:30. We'll be back with that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.